Very good. So if you are all sitting comfortably, then I'll begin. So first, just a little announcement. It's not a big deal announcement, because we're just talking with Robin. And for the afternoon interviews, you may notice that on the big sheet, it is from 3:30 to 5 p.m. But yesterday, it was from 3 o'clock to 4:30. And so I was asked which one would I prefer. And I just like to, you know, just whatever. So I said maybe on Sundays, Tuesdays and Thursdays. Now, apparently we've already put down the list for this afternoon from 3 o'clock.
Today 3
till 4:30. And so from tomorrow, it will be 3:30 to 4:30.
Yes.
5, whatever. Whatever it is. So,
you can go either way, but
yeah, okay. 3 till 5. Oh. So,
you want 3:30, right?
Yeah, 3:30. Okay. That's from tomorrow, for Monday. Yeah. Okay, that's fine by me. Don't ever sort of, oh, it should be this way, it should be that way, because always in meditation, things never go according to plan. There's always mistakes. And because there's always mistakes, there's two types of people. One is always, what did you do that for? That's a mistake. They're fault finders. But for us, I mean, it doesn't really matter. 3 o'clock, 3:30, 4 o'clock, whatever. So, you know, we have that freedom here. It doesn't really matter too much whether we start the interviews at 3 o'clock or 3:30 or whenever. But anyway, just for people's happiness and well-being. And also, so that I can get my cup of tea or apple juice, whatever, at the right time in the afternoon. Because poor yesterday, trying to give me some tea or something, but it was, no, I came earlier than expected or later than expected, so it doesn't really matter. So anyway, from today, afternoon interviews, 3 o'clock, tomorrow, 3:30. Okay, so having finished that, there's nothing else to talk about, so now we can just... No, it's one of the things is always to really to make some happiness and peace with whatever happens in your life. And have you ever done anything wrong? Made any mistakes? Welcome to the club. The nice thing is that when you're allowed to make mistakes, you don't feel tense. You don't feel sort of... what was that story many years ago? The man who went to the psychiatrist. He said, "What's your problem, sir?" And he said, "Some days I think I'm a marquee." You know a marquee? They just don't have that for ceremonies, outside parties, garden parties. "And sometimes I think I'm a teepee." He said, "That's weird. Sometimes you think you're a marquee, sometimes you think you're a teepee." He said, "I know your problem. You're too tense." So anyway, if you're going to get some nice meditation, please relax to the max, and then you find you can get some good meditation. But today, people were from last night asking me about all the other types of meditation, how it all works together. And they're basically asking about Satipatthana. But those are the things, you've got lots and lots and lots and lots of talks online. And sometimes people say it this way, some people say it another way. What is the correct way? How do you know what is true and what is not true? And of course the answer is through your own experience. And after you do the experience, then you find out what these things are and how they work. But sometimes we need some guidelines. But I like some more powerful guidelines to help each one of you. And the powerful guidelines which I like giving are some of the old teachings, but to amend them a little way. Not amend them, but just expand them to give them a modern meaning. And the simile I always give in one of these retreats is the old simile of the thousand-petal lotus. Because I was just thinking that this morning as I was walking up here. It's a beautiful simile to share with people. And many of you heard it before, but even if you have heard it before, even the monks who have heard these things so many times from me, and the nuns as well, even so, they always say that every time it's repeated, you always see it a little bit more fully, more deeply. And it has many advantages in this simile. And this is the first thing about a lotus. I should have said this last night when people say, what should you do when you get abused publicly by others? Or, you know, you get told off and people are always giving you criticism. And the answer is, just remember the simile of the lotus. A lotus flower in the fields or in someone's gardens. If somebody pees all over the lotus, urinates all over it, after the urine is finished, the lotus flower never smells of urine because all that liquid just falls off. That's the wonderful thing about a lotus. It doesn't keep any sort of liquid which falls on it. Or if somebody pours Chanel No. 5 over the lotus, that too just falls all off the lotus. And the lotus doesn't smell like perfume anymore. It's got its own fragrance. It doesn't keep anything. So remember, if somebody praises you, you are the most wonderful manager of retreats which we've ever had at Jhana Grove, Robbie. Just let it fall off you, just like a lotus. Or if somebody, Nicholas, has been looking after me, making the breakfast in the morning. If I say, what a wonderful breakfast, that's like pouring Chanel No. 5 over you. Let it all flow off. In other words, the praise and blame, that's a beautiful simile to make use of a lotus, because it does mean that you understand that these things never belong to you. And you receive them because you've got no choice, but you don't keep them. They're not yours. And then your lotus, you, has its own sort of beauty and its own fragrance. But going on with that symbol of a lotus, that when the lotus is at night time, it's always closed up. But when the lotus in the morning time, when it receives the light of the sun, the warmth and the light of the sun, the outermost petal opens up. Look, I'm not a botanist. I did plant some flowers once when I was a student. But, you know, living in London in an apartment block, and then as a monk, I never really got into sort of knowing about plants. You'd appreciate how beautiful they are. But when I heard about a lotus, and there's so many lotuses, you know, in Buddhist monasteries, you had a look at them when they were closed up. And next time you see a lotus which is closed, have a look at the outermost layer of petals, the sheath. And it's never fragrant. It's never really any beautiful colour. And it's like corrugated, these are ones I remember seeing. And it's corrugated because that gives it extra strength to actually to withstand wind or blows and things which hit it to protect the beautiful petals inside. And how do you open up that lotus? You don't open up that lotus. If you try and open up that lotus, if you try to do it, you'll damage it. You don't need that at all. All you do is leave it alone and just watch it. And when the sun comes up in the morning and those warm rays of the sun sort of strike the outermost petal of the lotus, the sheath, then that starts to open up. And as it opens up, it reveals the next layer of petals. You know, the most outermost petal of outermost layer of the real petals. And if you look at them, they're thick. And they're not that fragrant, they're not that beautiful, they're not that refined. But then those receive the warmth and the light of the sun so they can open up. And then they receive the warmth and light of the sun so the next layer can open up. And the lotus opens up layer by layer, sheath by sheath. And as it opens up, the deeper you go inside the lotus, the more fragrant it is, the more beautiful those petals appear, and are much more refined. And to get to the next layer of petals, you don't do anything. You just make sure the light and the warmth of the sun keeps on radiating that lotus flower. That's all. And of course, the warmth and light of the sun, you know, you are the sun, if you like. And you know, what you're opening up is your body and mind. That's the lotus. And the warmth and light actually refers to your mindfulness and your kindness. The light is the mindfulness, the awareness. And the kindness is the warmth. When those two come together, the warmth and the light on your own body and mind, then it acts like a lotus flower. It opens up layer by layer. And I mention this because you don't do it. In fact, if you try to do things, you usually interfere with the process. And it takes much longer, even can damage the whole process. So instead of doing anything, we are patient. It's one of the things which we don't mention enough in Buddhist practice, of patience. Being in this moment and just waiting here. But I often noticed that there were two types of patience. The first type of patience is waiting in the future. Waiting for something to happen. Waiting for what you really want to occur. And that's like many people when you meditate. You're waiting to get peaceful. You're waiting to get nimittas. You're waiting to get enlightened. When you're waiting in the future, nothing ever happens. But if you wait in the present, the idea of waiting in the English language also means like a waiter who waits on the customer. And if you wait on the customer, and if you're going to be a successful waiter, you always notice when they finish the first course, you know, what they need next, if they need some more water or some drink or something. You're very aware and kind. Then you become a successful waiter. The same, to be a real waiter on the process of meditation. You really are in this moment, attending on your client, your body and mind, always aware of what they now need. And if you have that type of patience, it doesn't matter how long, you know, your client takes to finish one course. That's up to them. And you give that time. And that becomes the fastest way to develop. But anyway, in this mindfulness and kindness. Well, you all know I gave the word of kindfulness too. So when you practice kindfulness, it's like your body and mind open up, stage by stage. And of course, the first thing which you shine kindfulness on when you meditate, you come, sit down, cross your legs, or sit on a chair, whatever. The first thing, of course, you're kindful to your body. You don't start looking at your mind yet. You don't start to stop thoughts or get rid of unwholesome states of mind. Just, you know, the outermost sheath is most important. How is your body? And the mindfulness and kindness, when it's shone on your body, does amazing things for you. And this is one of the reasons why I've all these years been practicing kindfulness on my body. It's sometimes very easy to cure little diseases, aches and pains, or goodness knows what else, just with simple kindfulness. This is one of the reasons why when you do listen to some of those guided meditations I do, you just go through your body, sweep through it if you wish, or just look for the parts of the body which are causing a problem. And just be kindful to it. It's amazing how that relaxes everything in your body. One example which comes up, which I often teach to kids, is what happened when I was at university. In those days, everything, the 3 years of study, was all down to one series of exams. That's why they called them the finals. You passed, you failed, just on that one set of exams. And that was over 6 days. Monday morning, Monday afternoon, 3 hour exam in the morning, hour for lunch, 3 hour in the afternoon, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday as well. 6 days in a row. It's just really, these days I look back upon that, that was too much. But anyway, I didn't have a choice. So I do remember how I coped with those exams and did really well. And that was in the morning time, a 3 hour exam in something like general relativity. Ooh. An hour for lunch, another exam in the afternoon of quantum mechanics. Ooh. And I never had any lunch. Instead, I went back to my room and sat down quietly. And as I sat down, I only had half an hour to meditate. The first thing I noticed when I sat down, and it surprised me, I was actually physically shaking. This was really high stress time. Like, you know, not just two tents, but many tents you're in. Because everybody said it's so important, you know, to pass your exams. But having gone through my experience, I realized exams aren't that important. If I'd have only known I was going to become a monk, I would have probably even turned up. We didn't know that at the time, so you went there. So I was physically shaking. And I'm not nervous. I can give public talks, I'm not nervous. But this time I was really, really nervous. And so when you can see something like just physical shaking, if you put your awareness on it and you know how your body works, you can actually relax all that shaking. And after 3 or 4 minutes, my body was still. It's even, you know, people with Parkinson's disease. There's one elderly gentleman who used to come here. You know, remember Peter? And he had terrible Parkinson's disease, but when he came here, he'd always sort of calm down. It wouldn't totally go away, but a lot of it would go away. And he felt so happy and peaceful here. You know, he could see there was some connection between the stress in his life and just, you know, the strength of the Parkinson's. So little by little, but unfortunately, you know, eventually he passed away. He was old, many other diseases. But anyway, it showed me something which I always suspected. When you are aware of your body, it's amazing what you can do with it, especially with some kindness. You can relax it. And so often in my life as a monk, sometimes many people try and get me to see a doctor here, a doctor there, a doctor someone else. So instead of seeing a doctor, because they usually give you tests. When you give your tests, you get more tests, and after more tests, more tests. There's some doctors who are very, very nice. I'm talking about doctors who are here. But there's sometimes, do I really need that? Little by little, that if you are aware, you know your body more than anybody else does. You can feel it. And often, because I meditate a lot, you can actually feel your body and how it is. there's anything which is slightly out of order, you can see it straight away. And as how to heal it, you just give this wonderful kindness. And you get some more resources to look after your own body, and weird stuff as well. And quite often, this is one example, when I went to South Korea to give some talks, I was well known in South Korea. One of the reasons I was well known there is because one day we gave a celebrity monk walk. Ajahn Ganha was there, I was there, this other monk was there, this Sri Lankan monk from the Zen order, and he only had three fingers in one hand. You know what happened to the other two? He deliberately put them on top of a candle flame and burnt them off. Sign how tough he was and how he was conquered pain. And Ajahn Ganha was sick, he couldn't go on. The doctor said no. I went on that walk, but I didn't have any socks. I don't wear socks. And so, because I wasn't wearing any socks, just the Birkenstock sandals you have there. So they were all open. And as I was walking, it was in the snow, up in the mountains. Minus 16 degrees outside, I think they told me. They're just walking happily along. And they were looking at the two monks as we were doing this walk. And I noticed after a while, just they started looking, they had their cameras, it was on national TV. And they just started pointing their cameras at my feet. And I apparently had the most famous feet in South Korea. How can you do that? It's freezing cold. You don't have socks on. That's fine. No problem at all. How can you do that? So cold. Again, you don't worry about it. Don't think about it. Just let it be. It doesn't really matter because after a few minutes, you can't feel your feet anymore. It's fine. And then later on, and not because of that, but you know, the next day or something, I remember having a cold. You know, it just came from nowhere and just started stuff coming down my nose. And about 20 minutes and a half an hour afterwards, I was supposed to go on for an interview on live TV. And that's very difficult if you're trying to give an interview on TV with stuff coming down your nose. And so what I did, meditate. And I know it works. You got a cold, stuff coming down. It wasn't hay fever because there was no sort of flowers or pollen that time of the year in the mountains of South Korea. It was just a cold starting. And as soon as I started doing my meditation, really getting into it, knowing my body and giving it so much kindness and relaxation and easing up any inflammation, after half an hour, it had gone. No medication. Meditation is much more powerful. When you know your body, you really know it, you know how it works, you know how it responds. Sometimes it's amazing what you can do. And this is my own experience. There's many other examples of that, which is, how did that happen? It's not imagination, it's real. But anyway, little by little, you understand when you do the awareness of the body with kindness, it's amazing what you are able to feel in your own life. One of the ladies, I remember her, she had to cancel her retreat at the last minute, and she told me when she had a mastectomy, just, you know, she was doing a loving kindness and meditation just on her body where the breast was removed. She gave it so much love and kindness that I think she left the hospital the next day and she was fine. Even the doctors thought she was, you know, pushing it a bit. But no, she was fine because the loving kindness and the peace, relaxation had given her a really rapid healing of her own body. So anyway, there's amazing things to experience, you know, with meditation. So much so that I wish I could prove this for you. Because then, when you leave here, you know, you want to travel back overseas. Maybe when you leave, I'm getting in trouble again here. You may not need to do a rat test. You don't need any more inoculations because you've got mindfulness and kindness to protect you. I said I was going to get in trouble. But it's true. I mean, you do, you feel a lot of energy and ability to protect. And it's not imagination. It's real stuff. But anyway, that's one of your first things with the meditation. You get to know your body. You don't become proud and arrogant and, you know, don't take a rat test when you really need one. You do that. And it's just to make other people happy. I remember the monks when I first took the vaccinations. So what do you do that for? I jump on. It's out of compassion for others. Nothing to do with me. I just know so other people, so encourage them. I haven't got a strong mindfulness and kindness. So anyway, little by little, you actually watch your body and it relaxes to the max. That's always my first thing which happens. I don't choose this. Normal. It's natural. Simply because I spend most of my awareness with my body outside of meditation. So you know the sounds. You feel the body's aches and pains, the hot and the cold. You can actually smell, and you can, like the smoke, if there's just a cool burn, nothing dangerous. Or you can smell just the scent of the flowers. Your body becomes very sensitive. But it's also, because it's sensitive, you know just how to look after it. And as it becomes looking after it, everything can calm down. And that becomes the first mindfulness and kindness on the body. And then that opens up till you get into the world of the mind. It's like opening up the lotus flower. And the next level of the lotus flower, which you observe, is like time. Because we live in this huge area of, from the past, the future. Oh, just we dream of what we want to be in the next life, or we don't want to be in the next life, or where we came from, where we were born, or whatever. Notice we are just so caught up in this prison of time. I call it a prison because we don't feel any freedom. Sometimes, can you forget about the past, let it go? Even though it can't be changed anymore, why can't we just put it aside, let it go? I know one of the monks reminded me of one of my sayings was like, put down the coffins of the past. Because that's what they're all, they're dead moments, dead experiences. And people who say you learn from the past, I disagree with that. You're burdened with the past. It's one of those great things about, you know, it just, when one experiences stream-winning, all that past is totally untied. It's let go of. Which means that you don't own it anymore. You thought you owned it before, but you don't. You thought you had to think about it because you're responsible for it. People have guilt. What do you have guilt for? Do I feel guilty? What have I done today to hurt anybody? I don't know. But, you know, you make mistakes, you understand mistakes. You're not a perfect human being, and other people aren't perfect. The interaction between the two of you will be imperfect. You don't expect that perfection. This is a human realm. So what you do, you learn how to make peace with everything. When things don't go according to plan or, you know, whatever, you just let that go. You can't change it now. You learn from it. You grow from it. So little by little, that, you know, the past and the future are burdens. Sometimes if you are in a position of authority, you know, you're the retreat manager, you have to figure out who's going to clean up today or what's going where and when the interviews are going to start, when they're not going to start. All of those things, you have to do that in your business life, and that's where you will make mistakes. But after a while, we can let that go. Imagine when you're not concerned about the past and the future. You stay in the present moment. I remember just, interesting life as a monk. Sometimes you go and give conferences all over the world on other things, not just Buddhism or meditation. I remember just, it was over in Singapore in the university there, we're giving a lecture series on dementia. And the doctor came up first of all to give a definition of what dementia is. And he says it's when people have stopped thinking of the past, they can't remember the past, they don't worry about the future, and they become socially disengaged. Well, it's me! And that's what I teach other people to do. To be demented. Of course, there's a difference there. But there's a lot of similarities there. And so when you let go of the past and the future, just imagine what it might be like. All the guilt, all the fear of the future, anxiety and stuff. It disappears. You're free. So that you go into that next layer of petals called present moment awareness. You open up time and you come into the middle of time, the center of it. You know, in the middle of time, that's now. Many times people have asked me, you keep on saying, go into the center of things. You've got an ache or a pain, go into the center of it. What do you mean, Ajahn Brahm? You can see that go in the center of time into this now. Then you go, oh, the next layer of petals. All your thinking. I'm careful here because you can think if you want to, but don't think so much. Spend all your life thinking. And how much time do you spend listening? Feeling, even tasting. People are really into food. Even here, you don't get much, but maybe because it's very limited. It's very beautiful food, but just when you take a morsel of food, really taste it. Put it in your mouth, close your eyes, and just let it just roll around on your tongue and enjoy it. Sometimes it's hard to eat quickly when you've got such good mindfulness. That's my old story. I keep repeating the stories because I remember this story so wonderfully well. The first breakfast I had after a retreat, a personal retreat, which I did by myself. And the first breakfast, the first thing I put in my mouth was a single baked bean. Just one. I didn't want to overdo it. But it was one of those experiences. Wow! You put the baked bean in your mouth. And you can smell, you can not smell, you can taste the tomato sauce. Have you ever really tasted the tomato sauce on the surface of a baked bean? It is, and it is a little bit sour, you've got the tomato taste, a little bit salty. But it was just so well balanced in all those flavors. I couldn't believe just how those flavors would just balance one another so perfectly, and it tasted absolutely amazing. And I thought that baked bean must have been done by one of those celebrity chefs, but apparently it was just out of a can made by Heinz or something. That's what it tasted like. And then I was just rolling it around in my mouth, and, oh, this is delicious. And then decided to bite into it. And the texture of the bean inside, it's not hard like a nut. It's not like soft, like, I don't know, like ice cream or something. It's just very, just right, perfect. Not hard, not soft, right in the middle way zone. And just crunched it. And, oh, that was amazing. It was really a culinary, 6-7-star experience. Just one baked bean in your mouth after a retreat when you were really mindful. I enjoyed that so much. And then I realized just what the heck I was doing. Am I going crazy or mad? I'm not going crazy or mad. This is just what happens. Just when you get a lot of mindfulness. And still, you're in this moment. You're not thinking. You're just experiencing. Life becomes far more enjoyable when you lessen your thoughts and start to trust your senses, this amount anyway, what you hear. Sound of a wind or something. I don't know if the aircon is on, but there's a breeze in here. And it's gorgeous. After a while you ask, why do we need to have like bands or orchestras play music when the sounds of nature can be so incredibly delightful? That's why you'll hear this very few sounds. You go out and listen and feel. Please, if you can, it's in the middle of the day, you don't need socks on. Just walk, just on the paths. Feel the concrete. I was just, my walking meditation this morning, just feeling the painted floorboards in my cottage. You really feel them. A little bit, because I don't know what they painted on top of those floorboards, a little bit fake, but very smooth, like satin, like silk, you were walking on. I just was really enjoying it. So you can actually perceive so much more when the mind is awake. And of course, I was very pleased last night when I went out after just a tiny bit of meditation after the Q&A. See, quite a few people were just sitting on the stupas or had their laying down on the stupa just watching the full moon. The full moon would be much more beautiful here after a deep meditation than you've ever seen before. You can see what's happening here. When the commentary starts to vanish, you see so much more. And also, you've got no problems. It's the thoughts create the problems, not things in itself. I haven't had this comment yet, but it usually comes during the retreat. Ajahn Brahm, can you please ask people in the cottages not to slam the doors? If they get up early in the morning, please tell them they can have a cup of tea or something, but please don't... Well, I can do it with this one. Please don't get the spoon in. As they stir up the whatever they put in the cup. It's amazing how... Has that happened to anybody on this retreat so far? It will. But especially the banging in the doors. Because, you know, people go into their rooms and sometimes, the, you know, wind catches the door, it just goes back faster than they think, and it could bang. Have you ever noticed how long that sound lasts? Second? Half a second? Bang! But it's the echo in your brain that lasts for days. Her again. Why is she allowed to come on this retreat? Oh, she always does this. Bang, bang, bang. Way after the sound has vanished, the echoes inside your brain, that keeps on going. And that is what we learn how to let go of. You can't stop the doors banging. What you can do is stop you reacting. Stop the echoes inside your own brain. This is what happens. So let it go, and it's gone so quickly. And the same with, you know, the teacups or whatever. That disappears so quickly. And if that ever happens to me, I think, oh, somebody's really enjoying a lovely cup of tea or something. And it makes me so happy. They can have this opportunity. So that's where we can start to calm down the torturing thinking mind. It's like there's always a conversation. I know sometimes people complain, there's a dog next door who always barks, you know, at home. Or these people always have arguments and rows next door in an apartment next to you. And it just really just makes you... Why are you listening to it? Can't you just ignore it? It's none of your business. After a while, you can. It's one of the wonderful things about sound. how much do you actually listen? And how much does the sound actually grab you? So little by little we hear, we learn just how to let go of sound. And let go of also the thinking. Because underneath that thinking, between those thoughts, there's this beautiful silence. In a forest like this, Australian forest, more than Asian forests, it's very quiet, little bird. In an Asian forest there'd be hundreds of birds, all at the same time. There'd be cicadas at night time. Over here the forest is just very soft, very tranquil. That's why I love these forests here. And that's, after a while, that resonates with your mind. You want to be peaceful too. I don't think I'm strange, but I remember just going to some of these monasteries, and I love caves, going into caves. And I remember one cave I went to in the middle of Khao Yai in Thailand. I don't know where this monastery is, I never found it again. It was idyllic. And you go to the bottom of the cave, and it was so silent. It was so silent, I couldn't help myself. I just had to cross my legs and meditate. I didn't do it. The silence just pulled me in. That's often what happens with meditation. You get a taste, a whiff of silence, and just like you follow it and get deeper and deeper into that quietness. And it is totally gorgeous. So little by little, you open up with mindfulness and kindness. You don't do anything, you're just aware and caring for this moment. And you get very still. And that's a beautiful layer of petals. Really fragrant. And then of course you still do your mindfulness and kindness, and even the stillness layer of petals opens up. And inside of that, whether you like it or not, whether you aim for it or not, you usually see your breathing. Last thing, which is moving. Sometimes people can see their heart, but the heart is a bit too coarse. And if you look at your heartbeat and start to calm that down, if you're successful and it does calm down, you're in big trouble. So instead, you want just calms down the breath. Now, if that ever happens to you, you know, you're meditating, you can become aware of your heartbeat. And what do you do in order to overcome? It does become problematical after a while. For most meditators, I haven't actually seen a meditator who actually, if by focusing on the heartbeat, can calm it down. Usually if you just go past it, you can calm it down afterwards. You don't actually calm it down, it does become calm by itself. So what do you do? Is that something which, when you are actually aware and you watch what's going on in real life, you come across some amazing experiences. One of those experiences was when I had, you know, was travelling in aircraft. And I remember just in those economy class seats, right in front of you was the in-flight video monitor, whatever it was. And you had to look at it first of all, because that's where they had the safety demonstration on the little video. And one thing which I noticed, when you first watched that video, you know, you can see the upholstery of the seat in front of you, and then the little grey plastic of the screen, and then the tiny screen inside. And what I noticed, I'm sure that you've noticed this as well, but because of, you know, being a meditator and a meditation teacher, it became so clear to me, is as I was watching that video, I noticed that I became unaware of the upholstery surrounding the screen. And I even became unaware of the screen itself, the rim of the screen, the grey rim. And all I could see, my mind just kept on focusing in all by itself until it just saw what was in the middle. And I thought, wow, that's the nature of perception. What is the most important, interesting, valuable thing to you? You will actually focus in on that, and what's on the edges will disappear. After a while, it will just vanish. And that's how I asked other people, suggested it happened a few times, when watching the breath and the heartbeat would interfere. I would never try to get rid of the heartbeat. If there was any other thoughts come up, I'd never try to get rid of those thoughts. If there were sounds of people around me, I'd never try and get rid of those sounds. I'd just focus in the center, which was the breath. It was the most valuable for me. It was the most delightful too. So it's very easy just to stay there and could hear the heartbeat over here, hear some sounds a bit further away. But because you're focusing, because it was joyful, natural, just on the breath, then just you zoomed in. These days, whenever you're going to some appointment somewhere, blessing somebody's house or whatever, you got to get on Google Maps. So you can type in where I'm supposed to go, and then you can actually see the place, and then you zoom in, and all the other stuff sort of tends to disappear. That idea of zooming in to what's the most important for you, that's what you do with something like the breath. And everything else just falls off the screen. So anyway, that's the next thing which usually happens, because everything else has already fallen off the screen, and just the breathing. Because you don't do it, because you don't seek it, because you don't hold on to it, it stays. If you try and get involved by looking for it, figuring it out, trying to remember to take notes, whatever you do, you tend to disturb everything. So instead, just be in this moment, be silent, and be aware and kind. And then the breath, again, as I was mentioning yesterday, becomes all these different layers of petals of just being aware of the breath. One of the interesting phenomena which happens, after a while, your breath kind of disappears. But it hasn't disappeared yet. What's actually happening? You're seeing the breath in a totally different sense base. For the first four stages of Anapanasati, you're experiencing the breath with a sense of physical touch. You experience the breath as a sensation. But then it changes to, as the Buddha said, a citta sankhara. It becomes, or even in the Satipatthana Sutta, it becomes seen as a vedana. A vedana. You're seeing it through a different sense, therefore a vedana from the mind, citta sankhara. You can feel the joy of it, the pleasure of it. And to give you an example how this actually, what I mean, is it's, I know that sometimes, you know somebody for a long time, and, they are the admin officer of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. A lady called Dimmy. And then one day she shaves her head off and becomes a bhikkhuni. Seminary. And the first time which I saw you, is that Dimmy? Because the clothes you wear, no hair, and it's just a different sort of, almost like a different person. You're seeing the same being, but through different circumstances. And sometimes it takes a while to recognize someone once they've ordained, as a monk or a nun. And it's the same way that when you start to see the breath, it starts to appear differently. Now it appears, something much more beautiful and refined, because you're seeing it through the sense of the mind. You're going deeper in to the lotus, and the more deep it goes in, the more attractive and beautiful it is. So you've got to, you might call it like the mental, the sixth sense appearance of the breath. And as that gets even more beautiful, you just with mindfulness and kindness, nothing more. opens out to these beautiful nimittas. Usually lights, which you see. But already, just in the interview, somebody said, and I don't mind saying this, that they smelt fragrances in this hall. And that is quite a common type of nimitta. Beautiful, delightful. Not of this room, but it's of the mind, how the mind experiences things. You're going deeper into your lotus. It gets even more and more beautiful. If you try to capture it, you'll miss it. I had a very fortunate youth. On one occasion I did go off to just the the year before I became a teacher, school teacher, I decided, I'm a Buddhist, I haven't been to see the holy sites in India, so let's take the last vacation I was going to have, I thought, and just go to India and see the holy sites. And it didn't work out as expected. There's two sites. One I couldn't find. I went to the tourist office. Where's Kusinara, where the Buddha passed away? They didn't know. Where the Buddha was born, it was raining, so all the roads were flooded. I couldn't get there. I obviously got there later on. But I remember just getting to Bodh Gaya in 1972 or 73 or something. And I was just so empty. No tourists there yet. And I just walk around all day. Hardly anybody bothering you. Really empty. But anyway, just remember, I always wanted to go and see the Himalaya Mountains. I saw them in photographs, in movies, but actually going to see them live. And of course, I hadn't done my research because it was monsoon season. The clouds everywhere, you couldn't see anything. But then I went off to Kathmandu and, with a few friends, apparently in the post office, the postal bus, we're going to the north of Nepal. You could actually just, you know, give a few rupees and you get a free ride up to the north. And you know, that's what we did, up to the border between Nepal and China and Tibet. So I couldn't go across the border. But anyway, just before there, they stopped for lunch. Didn't really fancy any lunch, so with a couple of friends we walked up one of these hills. And you got to the top of the hill. Oh, wow. The clouds parted for the first time in a couple of months. You could see the whole range of the Himalaya Mountains. It was breathtaking. Wow. I'd left my camera back in the van. I don't know why this happens to me, but it was absolutely true. I ran down to get the camera. And it took about a quarter of an hour to run down. And I was fit in those days, thin and fit, believe it or not. And then I ran back up again. As soon as I got to the top, the couple of people who were with me looked at me and said, "Where you been?" So I went to get my camera. And just at that moment, the clouds closed in. That was great. Because it taught me a lesson I needed to deserve. Beauty you cannot capture. You cannot capture it even on a camera. It's not the same as actually being there. Like this trying to say that Lao Tzu, that beautiful sunset. You're not watching the sunset when you take the photograph. So little by little I learned that all these experiences, you can't capture them. You experience them and then they change. That's their nature. You don't try and make it any different. And I learned the hard way there by missing a half an hour of beautiful experience. But anyway, little by little, these experiences you have in meditation, just like those wonderful experiences of seeing the Himalaya Mountains, don't try and capture it. Don't say, "I must remember this, I must remember this." Don't even give it a name. The deeper you get in meditation, the easier it is to remember afterwards. I mention this because I don't know any other words, trauma. If you ever had a traumatic experience, like a car crash or something, and you remember every minute of it, every second of it, you can't forget it. And those trauma experiences are usually negative. They're close to death or something, or very painful. We don't have a word for similar strength experiences which are entirely positive. Like what happens in deep meditation. You can't forget it. You don't want to forget it because it's brilliant. All those types of trauma, for want of a better word, we don't have to try to remember it. It's there for us whenever we want it. It's an indelible imprint on our mind. And that's what actually happens in these meditations. You don't have to try to remember it. Just enjoy it. The mind will record it by itself. So little by little, you get into the silence and this delightful nimittas. And you can understand all the experiences you have. People ask, is nimitta supposed to be like this? Is nimitta supposed to be like this? Was this a nimitta? Was that a nimitta? Most of the time it is a nimitta. And I say that not just to encourage you, but to actually to demonstrate. So often in this hall here, especially in the early days, people say, well, I saw a light. And they said, but it must have been the windows. And I say, there are no windows in this hall. But where are the windows? You put all these shutters in there. That's one of the reasons, honestly, that's one of the reasons I ordered these shutters to be put in here. Not just to stop the light coming in the afternoon if somebody's demonstrating on a projector screen, something or other. No, it's just so that you know this place is just no possibility of natural light coming into your eyes when you're sitting where you are. Maybe it comes into my eyes, to the nun's eyes, because of those back windows, but the sun never goes over there. The sun goes this way around. Now, I designed this hall. I made sure the window, I didn't really want any windows up there at all. But they said, according to council laws, you have to have. So we put some in there, then put the shutters in afterwards. But that means that these things are actually real. Remember that. So when they happen, don't go, oh, is this real, is it not real, what am I happy? Just enjoy it. You're going deeper into your lotus and you go deeper. You're only just starting. When you get to the nimittas and you go deeper into those nimittas, beautiful parts, they're right inside of you. What do you do next? Just be mindful, be kind. You go deeper in. Sometimes inside those nimittas, it's like you just go right to the center of the nimittas. Again, centering all the time. That's why we're always going in. That's why we call it insight meditation. No one laughed. Otherwise, I was getting too serious. You go in, and in there with kindness. Then you get into the jhanas. Brilliant states. States, incredible joy, and even more mindfulness. When sometimes people said, oh, you're just zonking out, you're trancing out, you just don't know what you're doing. You know exactly what you're doing, but it's new experiences. And because you're not really quite sure what's happening until you come out afterwards, and then you can analyse it afterwards. What you were aware of. Don't just ask yourself what you were aware of. Always ask yourself what was missing. What had disappeared? If you ask yourself what has disappeared after you emerge, that's where you get all the interesting insights. Things which have disappeared. You can't hear any sound at all. It's not like it's at a distance, it's just gone. Sound has turned off. Not sight, smell, taste, physical touch is gone. If someone was to touch you on the shoulders, you wouldn't feel it. So you're deep inside. So what replaces that? Just incredible bliss, freedom, joy. Those are the times when, I think I mentioned that in the Christian Bible, be still and know that thou art God. I mean, that's a big experience. You're not God, but you know, maybe that's, you know, the bliss, the power, the joy, the stillness. Get some idea of what that must feel like. Incredible happiness. Which is so stable and still. You get into a first jhana and you think, oh, this is amazing. And then you find there's a second jhana which comes afterwards. And a third. And a fourth. what the heck is happening? And the first thing, if ever that experience happens to you, that what, you know, I know one meditator that when those sorts of things happened, why has no one told me about this before? You can't complain and say that anymore. I've told you about it, okay? It's there. Right inside of you. Right now. The center of your lotus. And I mention that because it shows that you don't achieve jhanas. You disappear. Go inside. Allow all those outermost shells or outermost petals all disappear. Open up and go inside. That's why I love that story of the thousand petal lotus. Of course, I haven't finished yet. What's right in the center of the lotus? But that is a story which is going to come on another day. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. I hope you enjoyed it. If you didn't, it doesn't matter. Okay, so now we have some interviews. At least you know that the morning interviews always start at 9 o'clock, except when I'm late. Right, today.